Hello? Hello?
Anna's here.
Hey, Donna.
Anna, yeah.
Oh, Anna. Oh, hey, Anna.
Peter Franklin.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
Hi, Doug.
Hi, and who is that one?
Sandra.
Okay. Oh, Sandra, Peter. Okay.
Here.
And somebody else just joined?
Allison.
Hey, Allison.
How are you?
Good. Don't think we have Dwayne on yet.
Okay.
Hopefully he'll be on shortly. Hello?
Hello. This is Rick here.
Pardon?
This is Rick Wiesner.
Hey, how are you doing?
Pretty good.
Good. We're still waiting for Dwayne, who's the star of the ceremony. Hopefully he'll be on shortly. Dwayne will also, for anybody going to the national championship, will be one of the vets at the national championship ride this year.
I'd be going if my horse wasn't killed by lightning.
Oh, I'm
What?
sorry to hear that. Who said that? What's
What?
that?
This is Anna.
Oh, you had a horse killed by lightning. That's tragic.
Two were killed, but one was my 100-mile horse.
Oh, I'm really sorry to hear that. That's tragic.
Thank you.
Somebody else joined.
Dwayne's here.
Hey, Dwayne. Welcome. Let me do, I think we've, I'm not sure how many total people are planning on joining, but since it's 8:01, we might as well go ahead and get started because I know we've got quite a few of the APEX members already on. I'll just do a real brief introduction of Dwayne, who's been both a rider, very good rider, and ride veterinarian for many years. Not sure how many years ago I first rode under Dwayne, but I've had many, many rides under Dwayne, under both Truman and Super and my other horses. Dwayne will be one of the vets at the national championship, and Dwayne and I served on the board together for several years. Topic tonight's call is ARC drug rules and in general, drugs and our endurance horses and how to make sure that we've got them off the necessary drugs before competition, et cetera. And Dwayne is best person probably to address that in the country because he is head of the ARC drug testing committee or whatever the formal name is. And Cheryl just picked up. So, Cheryl, do you want to lead off with questions or
No.
just have Dwayne give sort of a brief and then let people ask the questions?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So.
Just a real quick query from my perspective. Is Tom Gower on?
Not yet, I don't think. I didn't hear Tom.
Okay. All right. Who just joined?
Hello.
Welcome. Who is this? Oh, well, Dwayne, have at it.
Okay, there's probably a couple big areas that everybody wants to talk about, but probably one of the most important areas is the withdrawal times or the detection times. AERC basically chose to change the drug rule this last year because of the increase in sensitivity of the drug testing that's going on, and it's getting more and more sensitive all the time. And so AERC basically realizes that a zero tolerance, meaning no outside drugs or no outside substances, at a zero level is basically something that's not realistic or feasible anymore. Because for example, with phenamine, they have testing that will go out to several weeks now that will pick up minute amounts of it. But outside of that, the rule and the spirit of the rule is basically the same, and that our horses should be competing without being under the influence of outside substances. something to keep in mind on the withdrawal time or on the detection times of the drugs is that there has not been a whole lot of studies done on what the detection times of the drugs are going to be. And so any studies that have been done or any times that are out there are going to be based on just a few horses. And if you when you look at withdrawal times or detection times, also remember that the detection time of a substance, and we can use banamine as an example, is going to depend on how you give that drug. Did you give it orally? Did you give it injectable? When you give it injectable, did you give it in the muscle or did you give it IV? Because all of those things are going to affect how the drug is absorbed, and that ultimately determines how rapidly it's going to be, it's going to leave the bloodstream. On an oral medication, those medications take a lot longer to be absorbed into the body, so it's going to take them longer to be, for the body to get rid of them. Let's see. Also, did you give that drug after a ride when the horse might be dehydrated, or did you give it to him at home, when he might be close to normal? I mean, that all of those things are going to affect how quickly the drug is absorbed and how quickly it leaves the body. Anybody want to address those things before I go on to some? I mean, I'm still stay on withdrawal, but does anybody have any comments about those things?
Dwayne, and maybe you're going to address this, but given all those uncertainties, if I really wanted to be safe for any of the drugs I'm likely to administer to a horse, is there a, if I said like 7 days,
right,
is that going to be safe for under almost any circumstance, or is
it's going to depend on the drug. Other things to look at, if you want to look at one thing I didn't mention there was the length of time that you have given the medication. Did you just give one dose of it, or have you been giving it every day for several weeks? Because that again, if you've been giving it every day for several weeks, there's going to be a substantially higher level of it built up in the bloodstream, and it's going to take the body, longer to get rid of it. One of the general things that you can do is any kind of, or most of the actual drug, most of the actual drugs are going to have a half-life. That's something that they establish when they figure out how the drug works and how they want to use it. And a half-life is how long it takes half of that metabolite to be eliminated from the body. And if a drug, and you can get those by just simply looking at the, an extended or a full drug label, all the drugs will have a published half-life. And that, if you have something with a long half-life, then you can pretty much safely assume that that's going to be something that's, it takes it a lot longer to get out of the body. If you have something that has a two-day half-life versus an hour half-life, well, you can certainly understand the difference there. AERC, I'm sure all of you have looked at the new drug rule, and AERC has published some suggested detection limits or half-lives for a lot of the commonly used medications. Most of those came from racing jurisdictions is where a lot of that information comes from. Does that answer it, Stag, or does that help? Or
yeah, I mean, it's sort of, I guess, the takeaway is that, in probably the prudent course is anytime you have a horse on drugs, even as far away as 2 weeks before a ride, or make sure your personal vet understands the ARC vet rule and advises you.
Right.
Is maybe the most prudent course given all these variables, because then you can, you know, your personal vet will know how you're administering it and, have some idea, and that's probably part of what I'm getting is this is complicated as hell, and I'm not a pharmacist nor a veterinarian, but fortunately I have a good vet.
But again, there are a lot of those detection times for the substances that are known or that are commonly used in the horse are listed in the drug rule, so that helps you a lot. But then, again, also, have to remember, and you can go back to using Banamine as an example. If you give it orally versus injectable, also what dose did you give? If you're way off on what you think your horse weighs, that can certainly, can certainly make a big difference.
I have a question if there's time.
Sure.
I mean, what about a drug that's not performance enhancing like Ulcer Guard that we might use because the horse is traveling to a ride or something and they have a tendency to have issues when they're traveling? I mean, that has a half-life and everything, but is it wrong to have that detectable in their system? Because if you use it to travel to a ride, it's going to still be in their system.
Correct. One of the things that's going to happen now with the AERC drug rule is when there is a positive test, the lab is going to give us the level of drug that was there. Whether it be parts per million or whether that whatever that is, they're going to give us the level that was there, and there may be a judgment made on whether or not that level of medication is considered to be therapeutic, and so that's what the ruling is going to be based on, and a lot of what's out there is one of the things that goes on with the testing is you can actually set the testing. The lab can actually set the testing to pick up a certain level of drug, so they don't really care about finding the minute levels either. But if you're using something like the GastroGuard or the UlcerGuard, on your way to a ride, it's got to be picked up on a blood test or blood or urine test because it's got to be there.
And what about things where we don't have a half-life, like Devil's Claw and Yucca and stuff like that?
Right. We can get into that for a minute, but basically a lot of that stuff you are using at your own risk.
Okay.
When you say it doesn't have a half-life, there's...
It's basically, it probably does have a half-life, but it's basically going to be unknown. Because there hasn't been any testing or any studies done to establish that.
Looking at something like the equine Vioxx, Equiox, or whatever they call it.
Which is the...
The equine Vioxx, Equiox or something like that?
Okay.
And if you have a horse that's on that for a prolonged period of time, this goes back to your, okay, is it a single dose or is it multiple doses administered over some number of weeks or months or something like that? And while you might know the half-life of the drug because it's a drug, the persistence is going to be greater because you've been giving it long for a prolonged period of time, possibly. Is there any sort of rule of thumb or guesstimates that can be provided for situations of that nature where you've got something that's been given and it's not just once, it's over a period, and then, okay, I want to withdraw the animal and make sure he's really clean. And, you know, does 1 week begin to be adequate if the horse has been on this stuff for, say, a month?
Yeah, I think so, and I think in some cases with some of the medications it's going to be a lot less than a week in some cases. I mean, if you'll look at a lot of the non-steroidals that AERC has listed, a lot of those are 2 and 3 days, and a lot of what we have been recommending to people is if you see a published detection limit. Or a published detection suggesting that you should, go ahead and add at least another day to that just to be absolutely safe.
Right. Okay.
But all of the medications out there like that should have you can probably call the companies and get a lot more information on, work that they've done or work that they know has been done.
Okay.
A question about the technology used in the testing, if you know.
Yeah, a lot of what's being done at a lot of the labs have either switched over or are switching over to what's called ELISA testing, which basically is an antigen antibody type response. They're looking for specific antigens, which are antigen can be a protein, an antigen can be a sugar, can be a substance like that, and that's going to be very, very, very specific. So when the testing is set up, if it's looking for a specific protein, it's either there or it's not, and that type of testing can be picked up in parts per billion, so it's very, very sensitive. And then what happens is that they, once the ELISA testing shows up, if it shows up positive, then they can do other types of testing, like a mass spectrometry, which will actually specify what drug is there and at what level. But the ELISA testing, they can actually set it so it will pick up at certain levels rather than stretching it way out again to the minute levels. Again, most of the labs do not care about picking up the minute levels. Does that help your...
Yes, thank you.
Dwayne, I'd like to go back a little bit to, I think it was Anna, who asked about the UltraGuard.
No.
Right.
Pardon?
It was somebody else, I think.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I think it was Deborah.
Okay.
Deborah, right.
Deborah, okay. I'm sorry. I'm not picking up all the voices right. Now, UltraGuard, the active ingredient there is omeprazole. Is that correct?
Correct.
Pardon? Okay.
Correct.
And that is on the list of proscribed drugs, not acceptable drugs in ARC, as I understand the new drug rule.
Right.
Yeah. So that's one that, if you're, in effect, I think the way Deborah asked the question, if you're going to give it as you're traveling to or from a ride, then you've got to get to the ride in time that the withdrawal, it would have gone down to the necessary level to be below the minimum acceptable level by the time of the any testing that would be associated with the ride. Otherwise, you'd
right.
forego using it. Is that a reasonable interpretation?
Yes, uh-huh. Yeah. And I think that it's probably, you could probably pick a fight with, a good fight with the, with stuff like omeprazole and the other ulcer preventative type drugs on whether or not it is, actually performance enhancing. When we put this together, we had to, we had to draw the line, somewhere. But I can tell you that was one that when we were putting the rule together, that was, it was not unanimous as to, you know, that you could say this is a performance-enhancing drug or this is not a performance-enhancing drug. But I mean, I think when you look at some of what omeprazole does, it can be argued that in some cases it's performance-enhancing. And so, you know, where do you draw the line on, you know, what the owner or whoever gave it to the horse, you know, they can say whatever they want for the reason that they're giving it.
Yeah, and that one, at least when I was on the board and subsequently on the layperson on the veterinary committee before I withdrew from the board, as Dwayne said, was very controversial on my own. Vet and Stuart and I are on different sides of that issue. And let me tell you my position on it. And Dwayne, I'd love your comments. Either, you know, feel free to disagree or agree. I think on that drug, from what I've seen following that for years, we just don't know enough. And that it also could actually endanger the horse because its effect. There seems to be new research that is affecting how the horse handles calcium in the body, et cetera. And the calcium for our endurance horses is obviously a very critical element. And so, at least in my mind, there's some question of whether if I use that, I could be endangering the horse just because we don't know what effects it is of what proton
pump inhibitor.
Inhibitor.
It's not going to mean anything to a lot of folks.
Yeah.
There has been research that has come out in the human medical field that shows that long-term use of omeprazole does interfere with calcium metabolism. You know, so you can take what you want with that to, you know, does it extrapolate over to, you know, to equines? And the thinking is that it probably does.
So,
you know, but the other side of it, you know, the other side of omeprazole or a medication like that is you could say, okay, you know, we know that a lot of horses have ulcers, especially a lot of the performance horses probably have ulcers to some degree. You know, and should we not be trying to, you know, should we not be trying to help them because of what we're asking them to do? And that's certainly a legitimate argument. And that may be, honestly, that's some of my argument on some of the medications.
So is this question of calcium metabolism or absorption? I mean, that's what, if you used it for months and months without stopping, or even just a couple of days while you're on the road?
I don't think it's really known. I think it's probably not going to interfere if you're just giving it. You're just giving it a couple of days. I would have to look at the human studies, but I think it's probably more shown that, you know, that somebody that's been on it for, you know, for longer periods of time. But it's certainly possible that, you know, a few doses are interfering with it.
Okay.
You know, the ulcer guard is a much lower, you know, is a much lower dose. What is it, like a fourth of the dose of you know, of the other?
Castrogard?
Yes. I can tell you that one of the things that I have heard or have been told about omeprazole or about the Gastrogard is it is eliminated very rapidly from the bloodstream, and that the effect of it is still there, but it's eliminated very rapidly.
Okay.
What,
as far as how fast, and I don't know the times, but it's, you know, because the published time from the company is 24 hours, but I've heard that it's a lot less than that.
Dwayne, you're both a ride vet and a competitor. If you're going to a ride and you're going to, let's say two cases, you're going to arrive at the ride, you know, say 36 hours or more ahead of time. In the second case, you're going to arrive at the ride, say, just 12 hours ahead of time. What, if any, things would you do to protect, mitigate the risk of ulcers, would you administer anything, or would you change the feed? Would you use, there are things like papaya juice extracts, et cetera, or do you just do your normal feed program?
I personally don't do anything to change anything. I think one of the crazy things that people do or when you go to a ride is trying to alter the routine that you've done at home. And that's just my own personal opinion. That's what's worked for me with my horses is to not change the routine and not necessarily change what I feed them either. I may back off of the grain that I feed them a little bit, but I don't necessarily change the routine, try to change the routine or add anything to what I'm doing.
Okay, so you just keep the feed as close to what they'd be having at home as possible.
Right. Now I have, as far as the ulcers go, I don't know that I've had a horse that has had obvious signs of the ulcers, so I really haven't had to work with it on a personal level. Have y'all talked about like Adequan or the glucosamines very much in the past?
No, that would be. It'd be great to hear your views and recommendations about those.
Because it is the way that that's another substance or medication that you could probably argue whether or not it is. Is it performance enhancing or not? I can tell you that on my horses, and I recommend it to everybody, that all my friends and everybody that I work with, I definitely think we should be using Adequan Legend or something similar to those. Those are really good products that have been shown to help the joints. Most of those medications, like the glucosamines, the chondroitin sulfates, they either do not test or they are not being looked for in laboratories. That's something that they're not particularly worried about looking for.
So do you have to give it several days before a ride, or can you give it the day before, or what do you do?
There's a lot of different opinions on that. I think probably 2 days before the ride, mm-hmm. if you're given the injectables.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of the studies with Adequan have been shown that's when it's once you give the Adequan injection that the influences that you want it to have are there, at peak levels at like 48 hours. But is it a performance enhancing medication? I think it possibly could be argued that it is, because of some of the stuff that it's potentially doing to the joint. If you're going to use something like that, I've always been one that felt like that the injectables are a better way to go than the feed sources of glucosamine or chondroitin. There's so many different, companies that are putting those medications out there. And some of the studies on like the how well glucosamine is absorbed orally, is questionable in some cases. And you're going to spend, a fair amount of money using those products. So, go on and use something, like Adequan or the Legend that works. It's kind of my feeling about it.
Is it better to just give it like every month, or do you try to time it so it is 2 days before, right?
Yeah, usually when I've ridden hard, I've tried to time it so it's before the rides, and then you can get it in. A lot of us ride. Do you ride once a month or more than that? But I think you'll find that you're giving it once a month if you give it before the rides. You're giving it at least that frequently, probably. Just depends on how deep your pocketbook is with those with those type of things. Anything else on the withdrawal times? Again, most of those, I think Tom had sent in a some questions about, you know, where to find those levels. You know, those are hard to pin down. A lot of the information that AERC has published, again, has come from the, you know, has come from the racing jurisdictions, so you can find it, you know, find it through those if you want to see, you know, another list of those. But again, that information is kind of scarce. And then, but if it's a published, not a published, but if it's a manufactured, you know, drug through a legitimate company, it's also going to have a half-life that's listed there. So that will, you know, that will help you, you know, quite a bit.
The AERC drug rule is available online on the AERC website, right? Including all
yes.
these, well,
yes.
this information that we've been talking about. Okay.
Yes, it's there, and then you can also get. I'm sure the office would be glad to send you the, you know, the full copy that I have here that I'm looking at now. There's also in the drug rule. There's also another appendix that lists what's, you know, the threshold levels of certain medications, mainly the ones that are used frequently or that are known. And the threshold level is basically somebody's opinion of the concentration of drug that has to be there, you know, for it to have an effect. You know, if you look at that list, you're going to see, you know, bute and banamine and procaine and those types of things listed there that are used, you know, that might be used frequently. A lot of that work has been done by an individual, Thomas Tobin, Dr. Tobin, who works at a lab in Kentucky. He's the one that's done a lot of that work, and that's where a lot of those numbers actually came from that we've published.
And he was one of the people, I believe, right, Dwayne, that helped the AERC Veterinary Committee.
He was one of the ones that helped us the most on putting this together.
Dwayne, it may be useful to say a bit about the herbal products that are out there. Maybe as background, I'll tell a sort of both funny and sad story about one of the positive drug tests that occurred in AERC recently. And that is, a woman was giving her horse a product, I've forgotten the name of it, that was supposed to calm the horse. It might have been platinum gold or something like that.
Right.
And one of the things that was to help calm the horse is that I think the product had was supposed to have decaffeinated green tea extract in it. Unfortunately, the manufacturer of the product didn't know that the supplier of the extract into the product, in other words, this is a supplier to the manufacturer, was providing them with caffeinated rather than decaffeinated green tea extract. And so their product had caffeine in it, which, of course, is a stimulant. So this poor woman, who thought she was giving her horse a calming agent, was actually giving this horse caffeine, and it tested positive. So maybe that is background. Dwayne, you might want to comment on what the prudent equestrian should be doing vis-a-vis these herbal products that are out there.
Right. When you look at the, you know, you can call them whatever you want, herbs or nutritional supplements or whatever. I think one of the things that you should do is ask yourself why, you know, why you're using it. You know, and are the reasons that I'm using it, is that within the spirit of the drug rule? If you're, you know, if you're worried about, you know, AERC, you know, because a lot of those medications are, I will still call them medications because in my opinion they are. You know, are you using it for an anti-inflammatory effect? Are you using it for you know, a behavior modifier? You know, a lot of those out there, a lot of them that are out there, they're probably doing one of those two things. be sure that you know the ingredients of what you're using. You know, if you've got a product that the ingredients are not listed or the manufacturer will not tell you the ingredients, then I think you need to be awful leery of giving that to your horse. I personally wouldn't take anything myself of those types of substances if I didn't know, what was in it. And even in that case, you can still get into the instances where, that Stag just mentioned, that where the manufacturer inadvertently uses, something that has, something like caffeine in it because they didn't clean their machine out good enough when they, went from one product to the next. The other thing is that the manufacturers may not always be trustworthy. I think you need to, I tell people every day, and I'm practicing small animal medicine right now, but I tell people every day, just like on food, that you need to stick with the reputable manufacturers because you don't know who some of these oddball folks are. Because the reputable manufacturers have a lot more to lose if they're lying about what their products are. Another example of that is I was reading something a good while back, but I think it may have been a drug testing case overseas, maybe in Europe or England or something. It was supposed to be a nutritional or an herbal supplement that was a behavior modifier. And a couple horses tested positive for an actual drug, which was reserpine, which can be used for that purpose. Well, they went back to the product, and that product actually had reserpine in it. The manufacturers were putting reserpine in it to get the effect that they wanted, and calling it an herbal or nutritional supplement. So I think you have to be aware that kind of stuff goes on. A lot of those medications, the herbs, I don't know what was mentioned a minute ago, whether it's devil's claw or whatever, a lot of tests are, the testing for those is either out there or it's coming. Those products are antigens. They have, they have those proteins and sugars and stuff in them, so the ELISA test for them can be developed and are either have, probably have already been developed. Any comments on some of that?
Well, I just would say, I don't know if it was performance gold, but those are obviously, we use them sometimes, not performance gold, but we use platinum products and they're very expensive. So you would think they would back it up. But I know, for instance, they have two different joint supplements.
Right.
I can't remember, HACON 1 or HACON 2, and one of them says that it meets the FEI standards because they've taken out the yucca and the devil's claw and that one's safe to feed during a ride, but I don't know how reliable that is or
right.
Whether I should withdraw the other one 5 days before or a week before. Or...
Right, and it may not be completely it may not be completely reliable. I think that it probably is a good company. But again, go back and ask yourself why are you giving that? If you're using it for an anti-inflammatory, then what does it have in there that's having an anti-inflammatory effect? If you think it works or if it's working, then there has to be something there that's causing causing you to get that causing you to get that effect.
Okay.
There's an awful lot of natural substances that have forms of steroids in them, that have salicylates in them. Salicylate is aspirin. That have caffeine in it. There's an awful lot of natural substances that have, that have those substances in them, or some forms of those substances in them. A lot of, there's a fair number of human drugs that have been, that's how they were discovered, or that's how they're made. It's from, from natural substances. So I think there is something to the you know, a lot of the herbal and nutritional supplements, you just have to be very careful about, you know, about what you're using. The other thing to, you know, to remember is there have been very few scientific studies done on herbs. Most of what's out there is, you know, is testimonial. You know, some of the stuff I've been reading here lately and is you have to, a lot of those herbs can interact with approved drugs or other drugs that you might be using. You know, they can cause ulcers. They can interfere with the elimination of some other drugs that you might be using. They might even potentiate the effect of some other drug that you're using. So you have to be aware of those things, or your veterinarian or whoever you're working with has to be aware of, you know, of those things.
Okay. What about something like rice bran oil? I mean, that doesn't have steroidal properties, right? That's just purely
No, that's going to be considered purely a nutritional or feed source.
Okay.
You know, all of those like that will be. You know, that's something else that we didn't cover on the, you know, on the withdrawal times is. I think there's certain medications out there that would, you know, cause the body to get rid of something, to get rid of another substance a little bit faster, or it might potentiate the effect of the drug, or it might make it hang around, you know, a little bit longer. If you're giving two drugs that are metabolized and excreted from the body basically the same way, then that, you know, they might both be slowed down because of that reason. So that you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to watch that. And a lot of that information, again, is, you know, we just don't know the, again, because there's been no true scientific studies done on that, we don't necessarily know.
What about Platinum Performance itself? Is there any way to know if there's anything in there that's going to be bad, you know, with test or something like that? I was looking at all the ingredients here online and, like, what the heck is Osteon, which is natural zeolite, whatever that is, and, you know, different things like that. I just don't know.
Right. You're right. You don't know what a lot of, you know, what a lot of those things are, because there, you know, there's a lot of common ones that are used, but there's also others out there that, again, they're not that common.
Some things they just call like BioSponge, TM, you know, trademark, and so they don't even tell you what's in it.
Right.
And that's just one of the, you know, 20, 30 ingredients listed.
Right, and again, if you go back to that question of why are you using it, I think you can, it can kind of clue you in as to what might be, you know, what type of substances might be in that.
I use it because Jeannie Waldron and Susan Garlinghouse recommend it.
Right. You know, some of the behavior things can be really high doses of something that you know would be considered normal, you know, otherwise. You know, thiamine is a B vitamin, but when it's given in high doses, it can have a behavior modifying effect.
Well, it's almost one of the last ingredients listed, so it can't be that high.
Right. Yeah, you're on the right track there. Look at some of the first, you know, three or four things listed. The other thing too, if you're using, it's kind of the same with any topical medications that you might be using. You know, you have to be sure that you know what's in them. You know.
Oh, that was one of my questions. I know the old drug rule, and I don't know how they changed it in the new one. It was confusing to me because at multi-days rides, I would sometimes use Absorbine overnight in between the days. And Absorbine was listed as legal, but menthol was listed as illegal, and it's in Absorbine. So what's the right answer?
Right. Yeah, I think that Absorbine may be one of those things that has kind of slipped through the cracks, so to speak, because if it contains something like that that's going to be absorbed into the body, then it's probably going to be considered illegal. You know, menthol, capsaicin, those things are considered irritants, are going to be classified as an irritant because they're, you know, they're absorbed into the body there and they're doing certain things to stimulate blood flow and stuff to the area. Some of those topicals contain, you know, an anesthetic like lidocaine. So you have to be, you know, you have to be careful. You know, you have to be careful there. A lot of the labs are probably probably not looking for antibiotics. We had a lot of discussion when we were putting the rule together of whether we cared or not, whether, you know, whether the horse had a level of antibiotics into their, you know, in their system when they came to an endurance ride. You know, I think most of us felt like that, you know, if you thought your horse needed to be on antibiotics, he didn't need to be in an endurance ride. He needed to be home, you know, getting better or getting well. So that's why we chose to say that antibiotics were not legal or are not going to be accepted. But that's one that, honestly, you could probably push the envelope, so to speak, more with the antibiotics than you could some of the other classes of medication because the labs probably aren't looking for it.
Now, for instance, something like isoxaprine, I'm looking at the drug rule. It says 3 hours, but then it says 36 hours for Canada and weeks or months according to an ELISA. So does that mean that if you gave isoxaprine and you stopped a week before, that it might be picked up on an ELISA test?
Yeah. Again, you know, some of the detection limits are also going to depend on what type of testing that the lab is doing. And they're, you know, one of the things about the labs is they are pretty secretive with and rightfully so with the type of testing that they're doing and what medications that they're testing for. Isoxaprine is probably, and I think getting back to the omeprazole, some of those medications do certain things to you know, to the body that will continue to happen even after the drug is gone.
I see.
Like the omeprazole, the proton pump thing, it affects that cycle in the stomach. And it's going to continue to affect it for a certain length of time, even after the omeprazole itself is gone. On the isoxaprine, one of the things that it's been said to do, and I don't know that there's any studies out there, but it possibly makes some of the particles in the bloodstream a little bit smaller for a period of time. That's why you might get better circulation with something like navicular disease. And if it's making those particles smaller, that effect is going to be there for a little while after the drug itself is gone.
I see.
So, you know, if you look at the AERC drug rule, there's a lot of drugs or a lot of classes of drugs that are listed there. Some of them you're not going to be given any leeway on. I mean, if they're found in your horse, you're going to be in trouble because you have basically no reason to use them other than you're trying to influence the performance of that horse. You know, some of those medications are not commonly used in everyday veterinary practice. So when you show up positive for one of those, you know, for one of those drugs, then you're going to be considered to be definitely trying to influence your horse.
So an example of that, Dwayne, would be, I mean, say cocaine, but more
right.
Another
example,
this
one actually came up the other day, and I can't believe that somebody asked the veterinary committee this. But there was something that was asked about a drug called fluphenazine, which is not commonly used in horses. It's used as a behavior modifier. It's used a lot in the show horse world, unfortunately. It's actually a very dangerous medication to give your horse. And so it shouldn't be there at all. This was actually a veterinarian that asked the veterinary committee about using flufenazine on an endurance horse. So, you know, those kind of things are kind of scary.
Okay, and those
medications shouldn't come anywhere close to your horse.
Okay,
no. Because there's no legitimate medical reason to use it in your horse other than, you know, a behavior modifier or something like that. And that's a good example of something that, you know, people aren't going to be given any leeway at all on.
Okay, and presumably another one in that class would be the one that I think was involved in one of the international incidents and certainly has been involved in the Tour de France, and that's, I think it's called EPO, right?
Yes.
I may have the name wrong, but something like that, that's clearly its only purpose is to enhance the oxygen carrying capability beyond the normal capabilities of the
horse. Right. I think in humans it's also probably, I think it's called Epigen.
Yep.
One of the things it does is increase the red blood cell count in the blood. In the bicyclist, for a long time they didn't have a test for the Epigen or the EPO. So what they were doing was actually testing the blood and measuring an actual red blood cell count. And if you came up way out of the normal range, then you were considered to be doing something that, you know, to get it artificially up there, and they were accusing you of using performance enhancing drugs even though they didn't have a test for the Epigen or whatever you're doing.
So those of us who live at altitude could be borderline.
Yeah, right. You're certainly going to be borderline, but you're not going to be 50% or better above what you should be normally or something like that. Any questions about what we've? It's a lot of information to absorb at one time.
I was just wondering, now that they don't go all the way to the sensitive test to zero tolerance, it's less likely that you could get into trouble by just something left in a bucket from a horse that was getting it. You're not even giving it to that horse, like butte or something like that.
Right, that's got to be, those cases are going to be, you know, you're certainly going to have an argument there of, you know, when you look at the level, it may be a very, you know, maybe a very low level. I think you do have to be, you always have to be aware of, using the same oral syringe and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I was guilty of that myself not too long ago. I have a bad habit of throwing everything in the same box.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to give some electrolytes to my horse, I reached in there and pulled out a tube of Banamine instead of a tube of, Lightnail. So you have to be very careful, what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You have to always be conscious, always pay attention to what you're doing. Let's see here. That's a lot of the herbs and the, with the withdrawal times. What are there any parts of the drug rule that somebody didn't quite understand or that might be controversial? I think there's some other parts in there, but
one thing that probably has gotten less attention, but I think is equally important that you might want to just discuss briefly, Duane, is I think at the same time the ARC revised the drug rule, you also clarified acceptable and not acceptable physical treatment at rides. Is that correct?
Right.
Yeah,
somebody had asked, and something that one of y'all sent there was, what's the difference between massage and chiropractic? I don't think you're going to get any two people to agree on you know, those definitions. What I would watch there on the massage is to not try not to be using any types of external devices. You know, if you've got you know, wooden balls and rolling pins and those types of things, then it's going to be argued that you're using you know, instruments to out other than your hand to try to you know, to try to accomplish something. You definitely cannot have anything you know, magnetic or battery powered or any lights or anything like that, because you're again, you're trying to stimulate some response with, you know, with lights or magnets or, you know, something like that. So, so those types of things are not going to be allowed. You know, again, the, you know, the massage versus chiropractic is probably a very gray, you know, a very gray area. You know, but as long as you're doing it with your, you know, with your hands, and you're not, you're not over there standing up higher than the horse is standing, or bending his neck or legs around in, you know, very awkward positions, I don't think you're probably not going to be accused of doing anything, you know, chiropractic, because there, you know, there's also acupressure, you know, tight points that people know how to use. So that kind of thing is also very hard to police. I mean, who's going to police that stuff as well? You know, myself or nobody else wants to be the, you know, wants to be the policeman for those things. We just don't want you obviously using. There was a case here at an AERC ride a few years ago. It's been several years ago now, but they were, you know, using a generator and a magnetic device. You know, those things are obviously not going to be allowed because you're doing it, you know, right out there in the open. So, but, you know, on the massage, just try not to use, you know, anything that can be considered a, you know, an instrument or external type device.
Well, let me ask you something, because there seems to be this kind of general assumption that the Sornomor liniment from Equilite, that's somehow okay and absorbing isn't. Is that true?
I would have to look at those ingredients to, you know, to say what my opinion was on that, or what the vet committee's opinion was on that. Again, it's gonna come down to what's in there.
I know, I'm trying to look at it right now online, and I know it has lobelia, for instance, and I think the drug rule has lobelin or something, but I don't know if that's the same as lobelia. And it probably has arnica in it, but it doesn't have any of the menthols or the capsicums or that stuff.
Right. You said that's a liniment?
You can get it as a liniment, you can get it as a gel, and there's also, they have it in the clay poultice now.
What's the name of it?
Sornomor.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
Right, like a...
It doesn't have alcohol, but it does have witch hazel. And, I mean, can you use regular alcohol on a hot day?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you can use alcohol, and that's one of the ones that you could argue, you know, they've been arguing about alcohol and AERC for 30 years. You know, putting it topically on the horse.
Now, here it says the liniment has lavender in it, but that's one of your prohibited substances, I think.
Yeah, most of the topical stuff, and this is just an opinion, I would probably not be too worried about it unless you knew it had an anesthetic or something like that in it, because you've got to wonder, you know, how much of that stuff is actually being, you know, being absorbed.
Okay.
And I don't think there's anybody that's going to be able to give you a yes or a no on, you know, a lot of that stuff. A lot of it goes back again to, you know, to why are you using it in the spirit of the, you know, the spirit of the drug rule.
Well, that, I mean, to me, that's the whole thing raises a lot of questions, because if you give a joint supplement, it is performance enhancing. If you give them more protein, it's performance enhancing. I mean, if you're doing things to try and prevent damage in a way that is performance enhancing. And it's kind of
with,
where to draw.
Right. With the joint supplements, I think you are correct there, because like the Adequan, in my opinion, it does things that could be considered anti-inflammatory. That's one that, AERC has chosen to give you because of the, because of what we're asking the horses to do. And again, that goes back to the omeprazole, is that's kind of where the line was drawn. Because when you start allowing things, you open up the door to many, many things. There were people in AERC that did not want to change the drug rule, because basically we went from zero to now allowing things because we're allowing medication to be there to a certain detectable level. So there were people that did not want to change it at all.
Unfortunately, what I really realized when I was president of ARC is it is a continuum of grayness, unfortunately. And we had one board member who was very articulate, arguing that giving electrolytes the way we did was, a violation of the rule because it wasn't what horses would get in their normal food. And that was one extreme position. I think to a lot of people, for performance enhancing means it enables them to run faster or run longer. And that's why things like preventatives for joints, is that really, it certainly is likely to enhance their career and means that the effect of a competition will be less damaging, but it doesn't necessarily enable them to go faster that day. But it's a gray area. I mean, one could argue putting steel shoes on their feet is performance enhancing, right?
If you want to get down to it, right.
Can I take things, I think, briefly in a slightly different direction? And we can do this if other people don't have questions. And this is thinking more or less from a ride manager's perspective. How do rides get chosen to be tested? And do ride managers typically get notified at all? But the only way I knew that Biltmore was actually tested was way after the fact this year.
Right. The ride managers, as a general rule, it's the way that it's set up is the ride managers are not going to be notified. Because it's especially in AERC's case, everybody knows everybody. So it could be argued that it's not a surprise, or it's not as a random as a test if the ride manager knows, because you could have tipped off a competitor, if you knew about it. I mean, that's the way that it's going to be. That's the way that it's going to be looked at.
Right. And what I was sort of, there's a, there, one of the things in particular, Biltmore, that I chew on in this instance is you got to get the folks who are going to do the testing in the gates.
I'm sorry, what now?
But you have to have access to the ride site.
Correct.
And some ride sites are secure, or supposed to be secure.
like Biltmore, right.
Yeah, and I also thinking in terms of some of the FEI competitions and things like this.
Right.
And so it's like sooner or later the system that you've outlined, while it's good, may break down.
Okay. One of the other things that I can tell you that, the way that the testing is set up is it's supposed to, it's obviously supposed to be random, meaning that, everybody has an equal chance of, of getting chosen to be tested. The actual selecting of the rides, I don't know that that's necessarily been random, but it hasn't been, you know, purposely done. As far as what, you know, if Biltmore has been chosen, it wasn't picked on, you know, because somebody's trying to pick on Biltmore, because somebody's trying to pick on a ride in Texas or whatever.
Yeah.
What,
just let me make one thing clear. I really think the high-profile rides, almost as a rule, should be tested.
Yes.
Just
and, right.
My,
see,
my
that, that's some of what the, you know, a lot of people feel like is, yes, we should be testing the national championship ride. We should be testing the Old Dominions and the Tevis and the Biltmores and those, you know, the high-profile rides should be tested. I mean, those probably, you know, are hit at a, you know, hit at a higher proportion. Some of the problem with purely drawing, you know, if you were truly doing the rides at random, so to speak, like, you know, because when we get to the ride, like it Biltmore, I'll keep using it as an example, when we get there, we, you know, the what a lot of the testers do is draw out placings. They're going to do the first place horse, and then they're going to draw a placing. So that's, you know, and if you do it, you know, the middle of the ride, if you draw those placings out, that's going to be pretty random because you don't know, you know, who's going to come in 12th at that point in time. That's not necessarily done with the rides themselves when they're chosen. Some of it depends on what testers are available and, you know, who I can get or who somebody can get to go to a certain area. You know, because if certain rides are drawn out of a hat, you know, then you have to find a tester for that particular area on that day, and that becomes a logistical problem. So does that help you, Cheryl?
Yeah. I
do. The other thing that may happen, and there's different feelings about it, but there's talk of turning the testing over to an outside source. That's come up in the past, and that continues to, you know, that continues to come up. You know, one of the reasons for that is, you know, right now it's difficult with the testing to prevent potential conflicts of interest. You know, and that's it's just getting harder to find veterinarians to test the endurance rides that don't have some type of connection to the ride or to, you know, or to somebody in the ride or a horse in the ride or something like that. You know, somebody like myself, if I go to a ride and I drug test a ride, the potential for a conflict of interest is there because I know so many people. You know, and for AERC to stay out of trouble, we need to get rid of that type of thing. And turning it over to an outside organization helps us to eliminate that.
Is there likely to be, is that the sort of thing that your committee is what I would call revolving around and likely to, does it come up like regularly or is that something that?
The last few years it's been coming up. It's been coming up regularly. You know, I think there's also a need out there right now to maybe look at the laboratories. That's the laboratory that AERC has been using, and possibly change that as well. So those types of things are brewing out there.
Does AERC send all of its testing to the same place?
Yes.
Oh.
The exception to that is going to be And there was this year as a ride, if there's a ride tested in Canada.
Oh, okay.
Because you cannot, not supposed to be shipping samples across the border.
Right. Interesting.
Stag can tell you all about that.
Yeah, you're bringing up bad memories, Dwayne.
but you know, some of the thing is the, you know, a lot of it is the actual, you know, liability for AERC, not necessarily the individual veterinarians, but for AERC. And if you outsource the testing, you take away some of that liability.
Yeah, just for those who don't know the history, which at least a good bit of it was in the endurance news, but AERC had a positive drug test, and it was not handled well by AERC, both the lab and also the veterinarian involved, and although there was clearly a violation by the individuals involved were from overseas with very deep resources, and you know, it's the type of thing you just don't want to. AERC, which is still a relatively small organization, you know, with a less than a million dollar of assets and annual budget, can't afford to get into lawsuits with people who have many, many more zeros in their net assets. And so in this case, we reached a settlement where they admitted blame and agreed to, you know, take responsibility for that, but we didn't actually, you know, we didn't take harsh action as a result. But it was a real wake-up call to AERC that we have to be very careful in things like this in the future. And as Dwayne said, there's talk and slow movement towards going towards outside testing, particularly in the U.S. We're fortunate that USET has sort of set the global standard for the proper ways to do equine testing. It's a difficult area. Certainly we see that in human sports all the time, including the Olympics and the Tour de France, et cetera.
Right. As I was mentioning a minute ago, and you maybe shouldn't say this kind of thing out loud, but the drug testing is basically playing roulette, so to speak, because the labs are not testing for everything. They cannot test for everything. It's economically not feasible. You know, and that's why they guard pretty secretly, you know, the actual medications or the classes of medications that they're testing for, you know, at certain times. So it's kind of a guessing game with them to, you know, to set up their testing. So they're testing for the things that they think might be, might be used. That's why you see, you know, in the human athletic field with these track and field people or the bicyclist or whatever, you know, they have a chemist on their payroll, and their job is to come up with a medication that there's not a test that they, you know, something that's not being tested for, or something that they're pretty sure a test has not been developed for, you know, trying to stay a step ahead. You know, the endurance people are not doing that, but, you know, that might be being done on the, you know, with some of the upper level dressage horses or something. There might be enough money there where that's being done. I don't know.
Any other questions?
I was looking at, like I mentioned here, I was sitting here looking at the drug rule, thinking what else might be, you know, controversial on this. A lot of this was put together with, especially on the detection limits and the, you know, the therapeutic levels that Dr. Tobin really helped us a lot. Looking at the prohibited treatments here, the shockwave therapy that's becoming popular now with treating tendon and ligament injuries. The seventh, we say withdraw that for 7 days before competition. That's one of the things. If obviously there's no way to, there's not going to be any way to prove, you know, whether you did that or not. That's something that you could do a couple days before the ride and go to the ride, and we're not going to know, you know, that you did that. But there's some pretty strong evidence out there that it has, the shockwave therapy has some analgesic effect or some, you know, pain-killing type effect, and that's why we, that's why that was included in there. You know, we're saying 7 days, and I think some of the other organizations that have put that in their medication rules are saying 3 days or 5 days, but we chose to be go a little bit farther out with it because of some information that we got from, you know, veterinarians using, you know, using the shockwave quite a bit.
What about different therapies where vets who don't know the ARC rule might want to, you know, inject a horse's hocks or stifles with, I'm not always sure quite what they're doing, and, you know, they're doing it on the spot, and I might have traveled a long way with my horse, and are there anything that's long-term prohibited that way, something like that chemical thing that takes out some nerves or something like that? I'm not, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, there are... You know, one is I would caution you to be a, you know, if you're injecting, have a veterinarian that's, you know, helping you with lameness by injecting joints, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Be aware of what they're, you know, of what they're using.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the steroids, you know, a lot of steroids are put in joints, and you know, some of them are very quick acting. Some of them last a long time.
What's a long time? What's the longest?
Depomedrol is one that lasts a long time.
Months or?
Probably weeks, maybe weeks. Sometimes on some of those steroids, depending on how they're absorbed and excreted from the body. Some of them are water soluble, so they're going to be gone pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other things that are being done. You know, you can do chemical nerve blocks or chemical joint blocks with something like Serapin, which is a plant extract. Are they testing for that? I don't know. It's possible that they are. It's also possible that there's substances out there like Serapin or something like that that you can use that's not it's either not testable or they're not testing. Not testing for it. I mean, you can certainly do chemical nerve blocks with alcohol. That's how they block a lot of the tails.
And aren't some of those prohibited now after the date of the rule or something like that? There was
yes,
something I read.
Right. There, you know, within the rule. You know, somewhere in there, I can't find it now, but it does say that the actual surgery to do a neurectomy or a chemical nerve block is prohibited. But like that's one of the things that is very difficult to prove.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you stick the ethyl alcohol there, it's going to be very difficult to find. It's going to be very difficult to prove that you did a nerve block on your horse. You know, some of this again is where you realize with any rule like this, you're also asking people to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right. There are parts of this that are not that are not enforceable.
Well, I'm just looking at for when to question my vet. Like, should we really be doing this? Because one of my older mares who's semi-retired, but she did have something like that, I think, in her stifles, and I'm not sure if it was any, you know, even helpful, or, but, you know, she did compete afterwards. It was well before the rules, but, you know, nowadays I'd want to know when to say something to my vet if he suggested such a thing again.
Right, and yeah, and that's where you have to be aware of, you know, what you're putting, into that joint.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the, you know, as far as the detection levels, it's going to be, questionable how well some of those things are absorbed into the body themselves when you inject them into the joint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do they stay in the joint or are they absorbed, you know, into the rest of the body? And, you know, that may not be known in some cases.
But that's what I should be asking. Is he trying to do a nerve block that permanently takes out that nerve, or is it like a steroid or something?
Right. You should be asking him what he's, you know, and he's not going to, you know, they're not going to take it as you trying to tell them, to do or not do something. I mean, they should be curious about why you're asking, and that should definitely get them interested.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about pulling blood, because I was just looking at the drug rule, and it says something about you can't pull blood and have it shared with a competitor or something. But I know when we went to the Apex conference at the Newman's, there was talk about pulling blood when horses come off trail to get information about enzymes and stuff like that.
Right.
They were doing that at the national championship ride last year, but they didn't tell us till afterwards.
Right. Where the line is going to be drawn, and this is, you know, this is something else that AERC has gotten into a fuss about. But you are welcome to draw the blood, and you're welcome to have the samples run, but you cannot see the results until after the competition is over. You know, we're not going to deny you the chance to, do research on your horse or to learn more, you know, more about your horse. That's why, you know, you've seen it done at rides. SERA now has a small, the Southeast organization now has a small blood analyzer that does electrolytes and those types of things, where people have been having blood samples drawn and, those results analyzed. But basically where the line is drawn there is not to see the results during competition. And the reason for that is, and I don't know whether you can argue whether or not it's possible, but that you could be taking somebody might learn something one of these days that would, you know, they could influence the performance of their horse during the, you know, during the ride.
Yeah, the and for those of you competing in the Southeast, by the way, I if you're interested in how your horse is doing, you know, it is available, and it's actually sort of a bargain. It's only $20 per sample, which is very fair. So you can have blood work done. The way it's done in Sarah is, if you want it done, you go see either Tamara Shea, who's the one who runs the results, and the ride vet, and you let the ride vet know or the treatment vet know you'd like it run, and they'll draw the blood for you and run it and give you the results after the ride. They won't tell you anything during the ride, but it can be useful, even though, you know, I've had it done a couple times. One of the things I learned is how little we know. But it did cause me, as a result of things I saw in one ride, to rethink my feeding program during the ride, and I think that's helped my horses. So it is a valuable tool.
Need to wrap. I'll go for one more question, but we're getting into the short strokes at this stage, and we probably should wrap it up pretty soon. Any other questions?
I don't think so.
To ask all of mine.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to thank Dwayne.
Dwayne, absolutely.
Yeah, he's a great resource, and just end with, you know, our sport's very fortunate that we have so many veterinarians who are also competitors who are dedicated to our sport. And particularly, I know Dwayne and the ARC Vet Committee is available to answer questions. So, you know, if your vet is either recommending something or you've got concerns about anything, you know, use Dwayne and the Vet Committee to, you know, ask the questions ahead of time, rather than to try something and get in the embarrassing situation of, you know, having a problem. So And I think, Dwayne, thank you very much for all the valuable information. I think also for your perspective, you know, if we're doing something, we need to ask ourselves why, and is that in the spirit of the sport or not? I think that's a great overall guidance.
Thanks.
On the blood thing there was if you get to drawing that blood, if you get to looking at that wording, we had to try to look into the future a little bit on getting in from, you know, what kind of devices are going to be developed in the future, for getting blood results. I don't think it's very far fetched to say that in the future they're going to be able to read something like blood glucose with some type of light. I think they're probably pretty close to doing that in the human field now. I know the diabetics would sure appreciate that if they could do that. But you can bet that that's going to be, somebody's going to use it on a horse or want to use it on a horse if that's ever developed. So some of the wording in a couple places in the drug rule, we were trying to, you know, actually speculate on what might happen in the future, which is, you know, impossible to do. But that's why some of that wording is there.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay, thank you.
And for those of you who are still on the call, if you've got concepts for future calls, just please send them out, and we'll try to get other experts. And thanks, Dwayne, enormously.
All right, okay. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Have a good night, folks.
Bye.
Bye.